This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with former Louisiana Governor Edwin Washington Edwards. Elected last in 1991 at the age of 64, now running for Congress in 2014 when he will be 87 years old on Election Day. Governor Edwards made his announcement yesterday at the Press Club of Baton Rouge meeting. We will talk with him about what he plans to do if he returns to Washington 50 years after he first arrived as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. Also on the show today, two members of the Robertson family, that's the Duck Dynasty family, Alan and Jeff, authoring a book called Everything's Better with a Beard. And John Spain, the former news director of WBRZ, along with Abram McGull, the photographer, on the 50-year anniversary, 30-year anniversary of the shooting of Jeffrey Doucette. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Your local number outside the area, 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. Our guest to begin is the man who is the talk of the nation today, Edwin Washington Edwards. He's in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and of course every local newspaper that prints in Louisiana. Because the four-term former governor yesterday at the Press Club of Baton Rouge meeting announced his candidacy this year, as in November 4th, for the 6th congressional district seat vacated by Bill Cassidy. Good morning, Governor Edwards.
Good morning. Happy to be with you.
Well, how's it feel to be a candidate again?
Well, very good. It's in my blood. It's my makeup. I love public service. I love to be of help to people. And I'm concerned about this gridlock in Washington and hope with my experience and maturity and my ability to get along with both sides, I can bring some accommodation. Don't suggest that I can change the whole pattern, but I believe I can add to making it a little bit better.
You made your announcement yesterday by making a comparison to Julius Caesar. Things did not end so well for him in 45 B.C., but what are the comparisons between Julius Caesar and Edwin Edwards?
Well, Julius Caesar was concerned about the condition of things under Pompey's rule, and so he decided he would cross the Rubicon, although it was forbidden, and he was could have been to death had he not been successful. And as he went through the country of Italy, people by the hundreds joined his organization, and by the time he had got to Rome, Pompey and his fellows fled the city because they could see the onslaught coming. He made a calculated decision to risk his life to save his country. I made a calculated decision to give myself to this district in the hopes that I can serve them and make things a little bit better for everybody.
Well, as you stated, the 6th District may not be the Red Sea, but it is a solidly red conservative district that went 66% for Willard Mitt Romney in 2012. How can a Democrat like Edwin Edwards win in a district like this?
I hope to convince everybody, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, that I have the maturity and the experience. I'm the only one running who's been in Congress before. I know the workings of Congress. I know the leaders there, and I know how to get along with people. And I just hope that people will look at me not through the eyes of a Republican or a Democrat, but through the eyes of a citizen who's interested in improving conditions in this district and in this country. Now, there would be a number of candidates running, and if a person wants to vote strictly by party lines, of course, you will be able to choose from probably 10 or 12 different Republican candidates, and I'm sure they'll find someone to suit their desires. But on the other hand, I offer something I don't think anybody else can: maturity, experience, a willingness to work, an ability to get along with people, and a very anxious to make things better for people.
The last time you were in Congress, Governor, the presidents were Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon. It's been a while.
Well, in my life, practically everything has been a while. But nevertheless,
well, yeah,
probably
yeah.
When I was in Congress, Republicans and Democrats learned to get along with each other. We sat down and compromised and made things happen for the benefit of the nation. That's totally impossible now, given the attitude of both parties in Washington and the desire of people to undo what Obama wants, whether it's good or bad. I can serve and I can work with people on both sides. This district needs somebody who will represent them and work for them.
297-5633. We will take a few calls along the way with Governor Edwards and our time with him. Running for Congress in the 6th Congressional District, Bill Cassidy vacating the seat to run for the U.S. Senate against Mary Landrieu. You said yesterday you considered running for the U.S. Senate.
I thought about it, but frankly, I have a young baby, 7 months old, and I have four other children, and all of us live in this district, either in East Baton Rouge, Livingston, or Ascension. And I'm very familiar with this district, and I think naturally a congressional race is a great is less taxing than running a statewide race for the Senate. And so I made a decision, since this is a vacant position and I don't have to run against anybody, because I don't like to do that. I elected to make the decision to run for Congress, and I hope that people will relate to it.
Who will be part of your campaign team?
Well, Trina has been very helpful, and I'm not going to damage anybody's reputation by announcing who they are, but I have lawyers and accountants and political advisors, all of whom are on board and working with me and have been helpful. Before I made the announcement, we had Trina and her friends had all of the social media worked out. We have an office located. We have a telephones to be installed. We already have the numbers. And we have a bank account. We're already collecting contributions, for which I'm very grateful. And we're going to run the campaign on a business-like basis.
Someone will have to do your media presentation, your spots, indicating why you should be in Congress and why your opponents should not. And ultimately, if you're in a runoff, which most people think you will be, your opponent, I would imagine there will be some scrutiny of your opponent, as that opponent will scrutinize you. So have you decided who will do that?
Look, I'm not running against anybody. I don't have any criticism of anybody who wants to run. I admire people who want to be in public service. And if people find someone more qualified and more able to get things done than they feel about me, then I don't have any argument with that. Please go ahead and support them and vote for them, because one thing that those of us who choose to offer ourselves for public service, we need the support and help of people who agree with us and want to see us serve. And I would encourage people to do that. I'm not running against anybody. I'm not angry at anybody. I really feel like I have something to offer, and I want to end my life. And we're going to all end our lives at one point, but at my age, I have to assume it's going to come probably in the next 15 years. But at any rate, I've had a successful political career, and I can rest on my laurels, but I'm energetic. I don't like being retired. I like to do things, and I like to serve people. And this is an opportunity that I have without running against anybody.
Lynn and Melrose. Lynn, good morning. You're on with Governor Edwards, and Mike, I think we need to get the governor back. Lynn, go ahead and ask your question.
Good morning, Jim and Governor. Of the many candidates running for the Senate, this congressional seat, I'm in a very unique position of knowing a lot about the two guys who I think are the strongest. That's you and Garrett Graves. I'm a coastal scientist with a PhD, and I served as your coastal advisor for 4 years and held the same position under Mike Foster for 8 years, and he had an oak tree planted in my name at the governor's mansion, by the way. I also work for Garrett Graves.
All right, what's your question, then?
Well, I'd like to see you defeat Mr. Graves, and I'd like to offer my service to give you a primer on the coastal, on the state of the coast, if you would appreciate that.
All right, that's Lynn Barr, Governor. He was your coastal advisor at one time. He knows Garrett Graves, who was, of course, immersed in coastal issues for the last few years with Governor Jindal. And Garrett, by the way, was at the press conference yesterday.
Yes, I met him. and I was aware of him. Seems like a nice young man.
What about the coast as an issue? How significant is this as an issue?
Oh, unbelievable. The Louisiana coast is a treasure that we ought to do everything possible to protect. And unlike Mr. Graves, I believe we ought to find out who is responsible, wholly or in part, for the erosion. And if we can identify them in a judicial proceeding, then we should make some effort to have them reimburse the state and pay for some of the damages that they did. Now, I'm not blaming anybody because I don't know, but I do think we ought to find out.
Another question, what about Crimea? Do you think President Obama is handling that crisis well?
Well, you're talking to a fellow who's got maybe a strange views on that. That's none of our business. I don't think what Russia did is appropriate. I wish they hadn't done it, but I'm not going to be able to judge here. I don't know what's happening in the Crimea. I don't know what the people think. Maybe they happen to have Putin take over. But I don't know why that's any of our business. I don't know why we feel like we have to mess in everybody's business around the world. We have problems in this country. We are going broke. We are spending money we have to borrow. Why do we borrow money from China and other nations to give to other nations? What the hell's the matter with taking care of this country? We need the jobs here. We need the money here. We best serve ourselves and the rest of the world by remaining strong militarily and economically.
Barry in Mid-City. Barry, good morning. You're on with Governor Edwin Edwards.
Thank you, Governor Edwards. I think it's great that you're putting your head in the ring for Louisiana to be in the House of Representatives. What would you like to do with our congressional delegation to help raise quality of life for all of us here in Louisiana, please?
Well, I have some plans. Number one, there's money out there for a study to determine the feasibility of a high-speed transit system between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. For some reason, our governor turned down the money when it was offered, but I would like to initiate that study to see if we can do that and if we should. That's number one. Number two, the Mississippi River is very important to this whole state and to our nation, and I want to make sure that we continue to maintain it, keep the ship channel clear and to a reasonable depth so ships can come in and serve the great petrochemical industry along our along the river. And I also have a deep regard for the farmers in our district. They're very important to our economy. Sugar cane, cotton, soybeans, truck farming, things like that. Very important not only to us, but to Louisiana and to the nation.
Donald in Mid-City, you're on with Governor Edwin Edwards. Hi, Donald.
Hello, Governor Edwards. Congratulations on your wedding and your new child. Hello?
Yes, he's on the air, and so are you.
Yes, sir. Governor Edwards. It's interesting that someone asked a question about the economy. I would like to ask you, how do you plan to adjust for the tax credits that have been given out by a former governor, and it appears that it's a drain on the budget.
All right, that's more of a state question, but what about using tax credits to entice business and industry? Is that a prudent way to do business for the state or the nation?
It depends if the tax credits are related to the jobs created rather than simply the investment, because if you have a plant coming in here that costs $1 billion but only employs 20 people, then you should be careful about what kind of tax credits you give them, because they don't contribute to the economy. Creation of jobs is what's important rather than the building of giant enterprises that manufacture goods on an automated basis without using human endeavor. My answer is this. You give me an opportunity to entice an industry that will employ people, and I'll bend over backwards to do whatever they need in order to get them here.
297-5633, 877-217-5757, or inkstershow@wrkf.org. We'll spend a few more minutes with Edwin Edwards, candidate for Congress, 16 years governor, 7 years member of the U.S. House of Representatives, 8 years with the Crowley City Council back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Edwin Washington Edwards with us for a bit longer, if everything goes according to form. A guy on I-10. Guy, good morning. You're on the air with Governor Edwards. Hi, Guy.
Yes, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. You're on the air, sir.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Governor. Glad to see you alive and well, kicking. Looking to serve great people of Louisiana. I have two areas of interest. I'd just like some general observations on your part. If you have any particular ideas, I'd like to hear them about the Atchafalaya River and its importance to the economy in South Louisiana, in particular the dredging of it. And also, I would like to know how you feel about the general quality and character of the district judges in the election process.
All right. Governor, were you able to hear Guy's remarks? Okay. I think we may have lost contact with Governor Edwards for just a moment, Mike, so go ahead and we'll move forward, and of course we'll impart Guy's questions to the governor when we make contact. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757, and this is a live show, so sometimes things like this happen, but we should have the governor back in just a moment. 86 years old, soon to be 87, and yesterday, before the largest crowd in many, many moons at the Baton Rouge Press Club, Governor Edwards, with his beautiful wife Trina, announced that he is a candidate for the United States House of Representatives. The last time he went there was 1965. Lyndon Baines Johnson was the president. Edwards served 7 years in Congress before his election to the governorship of Louisiana in 1971, and he, at times through the years, acknowledged that he didn't particularly like being a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, that he was a man of action, and he found a lot more action in Baton Rouge than in Washington, and of course the power of the governor of Louisiana is immense, and Edwin Edwards always basked in the glow of that, and now he is trying to come back after not being a candidate for 23 years. The last time he was on a ballot was in 1991. To put that in perspective, anybody under the age of 40 has never had the chance to either vote against him or for him. So much of the electorate was not around in 1991, certainly not around in 1987 or in 1975 or 71 when Edwin Edwards won, or in 1983 when he scored perhaps his greatest political achievement, defeating David Connor Treen in a race for governor, unseating the Republican governor in a race in which Governor Edwards won by a margin of about 2-1. I think we have the governor back. Governor, sorry about the mix-up here, but a guy on I-10 wanted to know about the Atchafalaya River. I don't know that you're following that as closely as you once did, but do you have any thoughts about that and about the environment as a whole? We talked about the coast, but the environment remains a major issue in this state and in the 6th Congressional District.
Well, certainly it does, and I'm a person who believes in balance. The environment, of course, is very important. We have to protect it not only for ourselves, but for our children and for the sanctity of our world. But on the other hand, our Creator gave us dominion over the earth, and we need to use the benefits of the earth, but also to use it to benefit people by employment, by producing goods and services that are needed. But clearly the environment deserves and has to have first priority.
Mike in Denham Springs. Mike, good morning. You're on the air with Governor Edwards.
Yes, I'm not originally from here. I'm from Pennsylvania, but I moved down here in 83. But there's a bill that went in that's going to go in this year for adoption. Children can find out who their real parents are, and I think that should be passed in the state of Louisiana.
All right. Well, he is running for the United States Congress. He's not going to be involved in issues, at least not directly at the state capitol, but Governor, I have a feeling a lot of people are under the impression that you're running for governor again.
frankly, I think that would be good for the state, and certainly I would like that. But I think the laws of Louisiana, given the fact that I've been to prison, prohibit me from running for a state office, but do not prohibit me from running for Congress. There's an open seat. I like this district. My whole family lives in either East Baton Rouge, Livingston, or Ascension, where I'm living. I've lived here for 41 years, and I've been a lifelong resident of the state. I want to serve, and I have the experience and the ability and the energy to be a good congressman. And I want to make this emphasis. I've been a state senator and a city councilman, and I can work with local officials. And let me tell you something. Local officials will tell you that having someone in Washington with whom they can work and cooperate is very important to them. And I want every person who's a local official, school board, councilman, police juror, sheriff, treasurer, whatever, you will be able to contact your congressman and get the assistance you need and deserve for your people. Because when you call, it's not for you. It's for the people that elect you and whom you're supposed to serve that are also my constituents. So you local officials need to know that you're talking to a fella who understands your problems and knows what a congressman can do to help make your job easier.
Leonard Joseph writes, would Congressman Edwards work to lift the Cuban embargo?
Oh, I have a very fixed opinion about that. I see no reason why we do not open trade with Cuba. We have agricultural products and chemical products that they badly need and want to buy. They have some items that we need, and it would help certainly the port systems of Louisiana. It would help our farmers and the manufacturers of goods and services here. And look, let's just face it. Cuba is there. They're no threat to us. They don't have a standing army that can be a threat to America. Let's trade with them and try to be friends with them rather than continue this belligerent attitude we have towards them.
Mary on Corporate Boulevard. Mary, you're on the air with Edwin Edwards.
Good morning, Governor and Jim. Hope you guys are having a good day. I just have a quick question. Governor, 50 years ago to be a Democrat meant something entirely different than it does today. How do you address the differences in your party? Will you run more of a modern kind of campaign, or will you stick to your Democratic roots?
Well, maybe the party has changed on a national level and to some extent in Louisiana. But Edwin Edwards hasn't changed. I'm the same fella, whether you want to call me a Republican or whatever, that believes in helping people. I think government should serve people, address their needs, make life better for people in all walks of life. And I'm what you might call a moderate Democrat, one who has an interest in other people and who thinks government should serve.
Michael Bell writes, listening to you and Governor Edwards, I like the way he sounds. I hope he is successful. I remember as a child growing up in Breaux Bridge when he was running for governor. He writes, I took an Edwards for governor sign from the neighbor's yard and nailed it on the pecan tree in our yard. When my dad got home and asked where the sign came from, I told him that Edwards came to the house and gave it to me.
Well, that's very, very nice of him. I hope his dad believed him.
Who was the best president in your lifetime?
Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson was a friend of mine. He was from Texas. He shared my views on agricultural products and on oil and gas. He also shared my views on addressing the needs of the poor and disabled and those who needed the help of government service. And what I liked about him, he knew what power was, and he used it to accomplish things and make things happen for our country.
So Lyndon Baines Johnson. Here's a man, Edwin Edwards, whose first campaign for office was 60 years ago. He ran for the Crowley City Council. It was the first term of Dwight David Eisenhower as president of the United States, only 2 years removed from Nixon's Checkers speech. You've been around a long time. I don't know of anybody in American public life who's had the longevity you've had. How long can this go? How long do you plan on hanging around if you're elected?
Look, I'm in very good health, don't have any pain, I sleep well, I watch my diet, I exercise moderately. I take care of myself. No drugs, no alcohol, no tobacco. And I just think, and I'm lucky I have very good genes. Don't brag about that because I came into the world with good genes. My mother died at 96. Her father died at 100. My father's mother died at 101. My mother was one of 13 children, all of whom lived past 75. Longevity is in my blood. Now, I like to believe that 80 is the new 60 because people are living longer. And I get to live for at least another 15 years. I'm going to see 100.
Tony in Lafayette, you'll be our final caller for Edwin Edwards. Hi, Tony. You're on the air with Edwin Washington Edwards.
Hi. I was wondering, I'm in Lafayette, but I do have lots of friends in in Baton Rouge. And what would you do to bring tax dollars or money to the state for alternative transportation, especially bicycles and bicycle infrastructure?
I'm sorry you broke up. What was the question?
He wanted to know what you would do as far as bringing tax dollars to Louisiana for alternative transportation like bike paths. And I guess larger, one of your major planks yesterday you announced, you want to get that rail system going from Baton Rouge to New Orleans.
Yes, it may not be a rail system. I think we ought to study the situation to determine if we need it, if it's justified, and what is the best transit system to use. That's something that is subject to debate and much study. I have my views, but I'm not an expert in that. And I would like for the government, put up $80 million some time ago, which General refused to accept, to provide for a study so we could find out. Maybe the study will show that it's not needed and not feasible. I don't know, but I'd like to look at it.
Governor, yesterday Jim Brown was on this show. I know you were close to him now. He was once an opponent of yours, but he was a publisher of your book. He knows politics pretty well. If I were in your shoes, I would be taking his advice. Will he be involved in the campaign?
I would love to have him, and he would be involved to the extent that he wants to. He's a good friend, political and personal. We talk on the phone practically every other day, and I'm pleased to have his advice. And by the way, Jim, that's one of the reasons that I'm talking to you today, because Jim Brown suggested that I do it.
I thought you wanted to talk with me, but it's nice that Jim Brown made that suggestion, and hopefully we'll talk again soon, Governor. Good luck to you.
Good. Same to you, and thank you, Jim.
My pleasure. Thank you. 297-5633 is your number, and we're joined now by Alan and Jep Robertson of the Robertson Duck Dynasty family. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You gentlemen have taken the country by storm, along with your extended family. Are you amazed at the attention that this program, which is the most popular show in the history of A&E, 11.8 million viewers at one point, and still in the millions? How have you responded to this kind of enormous attention that you're receiving?
Well, we're as surprised as anybody, and that was my debut, Jim, on that 11.8 million. So I've said, I think that was a response to the beardless brother, joining the cast. So that's kind of my line anyway. But yeah, we sort of wake up every day thinking, what an amazing life we're able to lead. And just for some a group of Louisiana bearded plus one guys up here in Louisiana, we're excited and amazed and thrilled.
And you have a book, Everything's Better with a Beard. Who are you trying to reach with the book?
Well, it's a kid's book. We have so many fans that are kids, and we wanted to put something out there that they could read and laugh and like. And I read it with my son the other night, and he's five, and he said, "But Dad, I don't want a beard." And I said, "Son, never say that again." I'm working on my son. He's going to have a beard. I just got to talk him into it.
What about the controversy that was generated by the comments in GQ by Phil? What do you think?
Dad has always been one that has spoke his mind very plainly and clearly for 40 years, especially since he became a Christian. And so, I was in ministry for 22 years, and Dad has always been very bombastic and straightforward in his approach and his beliefs. And so, you know, it wasn't a big shock to us. Obviously, you know, I always say that, Jim, when everybody loves you, they just don't know you yet, because there'll be some things that you believe that some people won't like. So didn't really shock us, but at the same time, you know, it's been a great response of people, at least for our right to be able to believe what we believe and be able to articulate that.
Allen served as senior pastor in West Monroe until 2012, when he joined the Duck Commander clan to work with the family business. He and his associates in the family are back in a vengeance with a book, Everything's Better with a Beard. What's the catalyst to the reception you're getting around the country? Obviously, this goes well beyond North Louisiana.
Yeah, you know, I think some of it, Jim, is nostalgia for our show. It sort of reminds them of, I hear a lot of Andy Griffith, the Waltons, those type of shows that sort of have a value system, you know, attached to them, but also are fun, and you can laugh at it. And so I think it's that double combination that's really kind of, really, I don't know, connected with people all over the country. And you're right, far beyond Louisiana. I think when we first came in, we were just thinking, you know, we hope to be like Swamp People, because, you know, they were the probably, and still a successful show, but they were certainly the hottest show maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And so, but it's gone beyond that. I think people have attached to the show for a lot of different reasons, but it's fun, it's clean, and I think people love it.
Do I have multiple Robertsons on the line, or just the pastor?
Yeah, yeah.
Is this Jep?
Yeah.
Jep?
I've talked a little. You know, we've been going back and forth. You know, we're so much alike, it's hard to tell us unless you're looking at us.
Al's a bit more well-spoken than I am, so I'm like, he takes most,
okay,
most of the questions.
Well, Jep, how has it affected you?
You know, it's been awesome. You know, I've said a lot today, it's a little harder to go to, like, to the grocery store or, you know, just wherever. It may take a little bit more time, just because you got so many fans out there. But it's been amazing, and that's what I hear more than anything else is, like, they're like, I'm so glad y'all have a show that our kids can watch, that's not, you know, bad. Because
right,
most shows nowadays, it's just, and even kids' shows, I've seen on, I'm just like, wow, like, the stuff they'll say, it blows my mind. So,
well, let me ask you, we're short on time, and we just talked with Governor Edwards. Your family's been credited with electing Vance McAllister to Congress. Were you helpful? Do you think you made a difference?
I think so, for sure. We did. Me, Willie, did you do a commercial? I know,
yeah.
Me and Willie did commercials for him, and he's such an awesome guy, and his son and my son are in the same kindergarten class. So I've known him for a while. So,
well, will you
he's
get involved in other races, or will one of you be a candidate?
Well, you know, I don't know. I keep seeing Willie popping up everywhere, so we always figure if he'd never met a camera he didn't like, so... you know, if anybody was going to do it, it'd be him.
I think that may be
a
yes.
We have no immediate plan.
Well, the book is Everything's Better with a Beard. Thank you, Jep. Thank you, Alan. We'll talk soon, I hope.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it, man.
Take care. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Michael Farrar producing. 297-5633 is your number. We're joined now by John Spain. For many years, he was news director at WBRZ Channel 2 in Baton Rouge, and Abram McGull is soon to be joining us, an assistant U.S. attorney who's gone on to other things since his career is a videographer. And 30 years ago this past Sunday, on March 16, 1984, in the 10 o'clock hour at the Baton Rouge Airport, Abe was stationed there to cover a story. Jody Ploche, an 11-year-old boy, had been abused by his karate instructor, who was being returned to Baton Rouge to face authorities. Jeffrey Doucette arrived, and Abram McGull was there along with the reporter, Ed Bugs, and a story broke that has generated national attention then and now. 30 years later, the YouTube video of this has been viewed by about 13 million people. Let's begin with you, John Spain. You are the news director, and you catch essentially a murder on television, much like Lee Harvey Oswald being killed by Jack Ruby. Was there any reservation at all about going with the story, about showing what happened?
No. I was actually downtown at a black tie event, and a pager went off, and was told what had happened. We were about a half hour or so before the 10 o'clock news. In those days, we had just introduced live broadcasting, so we had a live truck sitting at the airport. And I asked Gabe to put the tape on and send it to the office, and I left the Capitol House and watched it as it came in. And it was gruesome. And we made the decision very, very early on. I made the decision that we were not going to show all of it, but had an obligation to show what we could. And so on that first night, while we started editing it, Ed and Abe headed back to the station, and we were looking at the video, and we cut out a large portion of it, but left enough to show what had happened. And to my knowledge, I'm not sure anyone's ever seen the entire reel other than law enforcement. But it, in any case, what was shown is what you said. It was dramatic. It was one of the few times where people had actually videotaped a murder as it took place. And it became the largest news story not only that night but for weeks and months and indeed even years. I should say at the outset that I'm always have been pleased that Abram wasn't hurt, because when you look at the angle of the camera, he was clearly in the line of fire. And had the bullet penetrated and gone forward, Abram could have been hurt or killed in that. So not only was it a dramatic video, he was in an extraordinary risky place at the time. Didn't know it, of course, but he could have been killed in that incident as well.
In slow motion, at one point, the gun is pointed right at him, right at the camera.
Exactly.
And Abram didn't flinch. He did his job. What do you recall about that night, Abram McGall? Good to talk with you.
It's good to talk to you and John as well. What I do recall about that night, it was what we thought was a routine assignment. And Ed Buggs and I went to the airport to capture, just to get some B-roll of the suspects coming in. And as he was approaching past the security section, I had looked over to the bank of phones, and Gary Plosher, at one point, we made eye contact with each other, but I didn't know who he was. And but he had a hat pulled over his head and dark sunglasses, and so I didn't think much of it. So when everything lined up, that is, Doucette came, as John explained, parallel with me. We were all lined up in a straight line toward each other, and the bullet went off. I heard the sound. I first thought it was a firecracker. And then I saw Doucette fall to the floor, and I follow it. And as John said, there were some other parts of the film, a little bit more gruesome than the whole event, even though the event itself was horrific, that we didn't show. But when he hit the ground, I knew at that point something had happened that caused him to fall. So I panned up with my camera, and I could see Gary Plosher standing there, and the police officers rushed him. And I'll never forget what he said when the police officer rushed him. They all jumped at him, and I guess they realized it was Gary. And they said, "Gary, why? Gary, why?" And Gary said, "If that had been your son, you'd have done the same thing, too." And even to this day, even 30 years from now, it's still a chilling moment for me as a federal prosecutor. I think back, you know, that this is what you call a clash between justice and vigilante justice and public condemnation versus private condemnation is a battle. And I've often asked, and just recently NBC just interviewed me about this and often asked me how I feel about this being a federal prosecutor. Well, I say, we cannot condone vigilante justice. I've seen that happen when people take matters into their own hand. It weakens the criminal justice system, and we're left with a weak criminal justice system and people taking the law into their own hand. It's not a very good thing for our system at all.
Well, Gary Plosher ended up getting a suspended sentence. He did not serve time. He still lives in this community. He has been less than healthy. He's had a terrible stroke and he cannot really talk. His son, of course, has become an advocate for victims. Jody was a young man, 11 years old, in 1984 when this happened, so that would make him 41 now. 30 years later, this is one of the few times that a murder has been caught live by cameras. And John Spain, you had to not only make a decision about how much you were going to show, but how much you were going to share. This is a competitive business. What was the thinking regarding how much of this do we let other media outlets have access to?
It went out fairly quickly. Obviously, the network called immediately, and so it went national very quickly. And at least during the time I was there, we tried to restrict its wide distribution. I think we probably failed on that. You can see it on the internet today. We wanted to be respectful to the incident itself without backing away from the idea that this was a very unique piece of news footage, and it doesn't happen all the time, and there was a great deal of interest in it. There was a great deal of interest not only in the video but in the story and the circumstances that led up to it. But it went national very, very quickly, and there were a lot of follow-ups, and then a lot of other programs have picked it up. Mm-hmm. I suspect that Abe can't remember the number of times he's probably done an interview on this thing, but it's continued to be of interest, and it's of interest because it is unique. There are very few times, certainly in modern television, where a camera has captured a shooting like that, and it's still very, very dramatic when you see it today.
Abe, a few years back, more than a few, Abe was on this program, and Ed Buggs joined us, who was the reporter. He was there as well, and Ed acknowledged, Abe, that his first reaction was to get out of the way.
And to get out of there.
He ran.
He did. He did. He was a smart man.
But you hung with the action, and I've never seen the complete video, but people at the station have told me they've seen it, and that night when others were watching it, that people were immensely affected by it.
There's no way you can't. I mean, you never can become accustomed to watching a human being being shot in front of you. The portions that people haven't seen are not really taking away from the significance of the video. You see everything that's really important in that video. But we took great, great pains on that night and every other time we showed it to give viewer warning that this is going to be mm-hmm. a very, very dramatic piece of video.
How quickly was it between the shooting and the time it aired?
Oh, it made the 10 o'clock news. You know, it wouldn't have. We made the judgment of how long would it take them to get back to the airport, knowing that I knew I wasn't going to allow it to go on without looking at it. And I had not made the decision as to whether we were going to edit it because I hadn't seen it. But once I saw it, I made a decision very early that we were going to clean this up to the extent that we could. And it didn't take anything away from the story itself. It's just more gruesome. And we made the 10 o'clock, and as I recall, Ed and Abe made it back to the station and were on the set that night and were able to tell us what had happened.
Abe has been not only a prosecutor, but he was a warrior as well. He's been in war zones as an officer. But my guess is you never have encountered anything quite like you did on the night of March 16th, 1984.
You're absolutely right about that. That was, from a news value, a very important news story. We used to have a saying in the news business that we don't apologize for reality, and that was the ultimate reality that night. So I have not seen anything as horrific or significant in terms of news value as that particular story.
And Doucette never knew what hit him.
No. I think most people recognize he died instantly.
HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air with John Spain and Abram Magull. Hi, HB.
Good morning, gentlemen. I went all the way through school with Gary, and I know him very well. My question's two-part. How did he know when and where Doucet was coming in, and why wasn't more security provided for Doucet with the seriousness of the arrest of Doucet? Thank you, sir.
That's the other side of the story that was also troublesome for us at Channel 2 at the time. We had covered the story for some time, and ultimately we learned about the officers bringing him back, having talked to law enforcement and sources that we had at the time. The other side of that story is that our producer at the time, a gentleman by the name of Bob Shadell, who's since died, was, as it turns out, a friend of Gary Ploche and told him information about when he would arrive. So he found out about it from one of our producers. Ultimately, when we started investigating the aftermath of this, because everyone was asking the same question this gentleman was, is how did he know when those officers would be coming back through the airport? The sheriff's office looked into it, we looked into it, and we ultimately discovered that we were the source, that our producer had had lunch, and Gary and was talking about it. Gary had overheard it, and ultimately I fired Bob Shadell over that incident. The other piece is that you wouldn't, I think, today see what we saw that night. It was not uncommon that deputies brought people back on a commercial airplane with handcuffs and brought them through the airport. We never see that today. They'd have a car on the tarmac, I think, and take them off an airplane and wouldn't bring them through a public place like that. So all of the circumstances were such that the law enforcement people thought that no one knew. There was no reason for them to believe that somehow someone had found out. And yet it all came to pieces that night. And so the answer to as to why there were no more security officers there is that this was a fairly routine returning a criminal back to Baton Rouge, and it was done all the time.
That story had all the components of a riveting story. It had abuse of a child and murder. It had everything. It's an irresistible story, and you covered it for days after. I don't see how you could not have, but I'm sure you got some criticism for doing so.
Well, we got criticism both ways. We had actually covered the story ahead of time. In the news business, we own that story, and there wasn't a great deal of interest by our competitors on it, so we were very familiar with it, which is, again, why we knew from our sources when this would take place. It was unfortunate that our producer leaked it to Gary, and had he not done that, I'm assuming that none of this would have happened.
Mm-hmm. And I would only add to that is that since that video aired, I found out later that FBI and other law enforcement authorities use it as a training film as what not to do when escorting a prisoner. So I think a lot of security features have been upgraded since this incident.
It is remarkable that the Ploches have not had as much attention as you might think in the years that have passed. Gary, as mentioned, has had a tough life, and Jody has been around, but I don't see people putting microphones in his face a whole lot. He's talked openly about this, but it was a tough story all the way around. Anytime you're talking about abuse of a child, John, there's some lines that are difficult to cross.
I think that's largely why we have not seen them in the public more than perhaps that they have been. It was a tragic story. We wanted to leave the family alone, and we certainly wanted to respect a young child's need for privacy. And I don't know that we would have pursued it after this. I don't think the public was all that surprised that he didn't spend any time in jail. This was a high-profile case. It was an emotional case. People questioned what they would do themselves in that same circumstances, and I think largely the public opinion at the time sided with Gary, while not agreeing that he did what was right. They certainly understood it. I think we polled it at the time and understood that public sentiment was actually in his corner. As big a story as it was, I think there was also a sense that we were ready for it to move on.
Now, Abe's had an interesting life since then. He's also been a mayor at one point.
I'm very proud of Abe. He's done very well. He's served our country in a number of ways and continues to do that, and I'm very proud of him.
And I'm sure this terrible episode affected you in probably good ways and not so good ways.
It has. I think the event itself, as you look at the video, it was a tragedy. Whenever we take someone else's life, under those circumstances, it has an impact that's lasting.
Well, thank you, Abe McGull, and thank you, John Spain. And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, for Michael Farrar, I'm Jim Engster. We thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.